A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 377. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Torchy the Battery Boy. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, welcome. It's that time again when once a year we like to try and cover a show from the work of Gerry Anderson. And we've gone back very early in his career this time. It's, I think, possibly the first of his puppet shows that we're able to watch. It's Torchy the Battery Boy, which ran for 2 series from 1959 to 1961. There's a total of 52 episodes of about 15 minutes or just under each. Quite a lot to watch, and it's got some interesting stuff for a so early a show, Brian.
Yes, it does. And this is really going back to sort of 1950s children's television with, you know, these quarter hour episodes in black and white. And it's a puppet show that has some fantastical characters and a sort of fairy tale style setting, clearly aimed at young children.
Yes. It is, as we say, we will find out as we go along, it is very much a show for the younger audience.
Yes, absolutely. So the setup, we have the kindly toy maker, Mr. Bumbledrop, who maintains his garden as a sort of playground for the local children. He's sort of, you know, the charming, nice old man. But when a fierce wind blows away all of the children's toys, Mr. Bumbledrop becomes quite lonely. And in fact, his dog is blown away with the toys as well. And at first, he doesn't know where they are.
And so if you're a toy maker, a kindly old toy maker who's lonely, you make yourself almost Pinocchio style. You make yourself a little boy called Torchy, the Battery Boy, operated by a battery and with a magical torch that he wears in his hat. A torch that can shine a light and hopefully find the missing toys. It seems to have magical powers, the torch does, Brian.
Yes, it can find all sorts of things, and it can even let you communicate over a long distance.
And not only does he build him the torch, he also builds a cardboard rocket ship, which will carry Torchy to a distant star where they will find, or he will find, a magical land called Topsy Turvy Land, where all the toys come to life and lead happy lives in a sort of faraway, fantastical land that is somehow or other on a star.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's some confusion over the difference between a star and a planet and how this was created. But yes, it is on a star, and the children who visit it from time to time are shrunk down to toy size. So the children and the toys are the same size. And when Mr. Bumbledrop goes out to Topsy Turvy Land on occasion, he's that size too. And the toys are all able to walk and talk and interact, where on Earth, only Torchy the Battery Boy himself is able to walk and talk. And we end up with most of the adventures and stories happening on Topsy Turvy Land.
A fantastical place for some fantastical adventures.
Absolutely. So we should describe some of the characters. We've already mentioned Mr. Bumbledrop, who was voiced by Kenneth Connor, well known for the Carry On movies. And he is the kindly old toy maker with a quite impressive gray beard. It really looks quite spectacular. And he is always trying to do the best for the toys and the children and also for his dog, who we'll mention shortly. And he is the sympathetic, older sort of mentor character who helps things along.
And then there's his magical creation, Torchy, the battery boy, who comes to life, battery powered with his magical torch that will find lost toys and will help to teach naughty children a certain moral lesson along the way. Torchy was voiced by the actress Olwen Griffiths, who we've just discovered before we recorded showed up, and we think playing the cook in Moondial on television 30 years later. So an interesting connection to another show that we've covered. But here doing the voice of the little battery boy and doing the singing as well.
Yes, indeed. And I think at this point in the late 50s, a torch or a flashlight, as you'd say in North America, seemed a little bit magical still. And the battery seemed like something that was kind of remarkable. So we have this character, Torchy, who with this battery is able to do all sorts of things. Pom Pom the Poodle was voiced by Patricia Somerset. She was Mr. Bumbledrop's pet dog, also the only poodle with straight hair, who is always getting curlers or rollers in her hair to make her hair look curly.
And I think our listeners would just enjoy hearing you say Mr. Bumbledrop and Pom Pom the Poodle, Brian. It's remarkable character names.
Yes, this is very much in that sort of older, you know, 1950s, very early 1960s children's television mold.
Yes, indeed. And of course, if it's a story about children, we probably have some naughty children, led by the emblematic Bossy Boots, voiced, we think, again by Patricia Somerset. This is the naughty child who's always getting her way, but will be taught some various lessons when she moves or when she's taken to topsy-turvy land. And there, as you've probably gathered already, there's a little bit of that in this show for children. There's a certain amount of good and bad behaviour and some moral lessons about bad behaviour.
Yes, and there are, not too surprisingly, some stereotypes that come up here. And having the young girl who is quote-unquote bossy, and in this case even has the name Bossy, is one of those. We also have a narrator. That's Joel Freud doing the narration, which I think Eamon reminded you of the Watch with Mother franchise that was so successful in the UK.
Yes, and of course, as you say, Brian, we're in the 1950s, early 1960s. It started as Listen with Mother on the radio. It became Watch with Mother on the television. And it's that sort of comforting, friendly, caring narrator voice that we get for this series that tells us sometimes what's going on.
Yes, interesting.
And we should say that there are lots and lots of characters in Torchy the Battery Boy, and I guess voiced by members of the cast.
Yes, they often bring in new characters, and characters will drop out and come back again. You know, they're not all in every episode. They show up from time to time, many of them. And there are some important ones that we'll mention as we go along. So in the episodes, we often have Torchy traveling back and forth between Earth and topsy-turvy land in the rocket ship that Mr. Bumbledrop built for him originally. It seems to be quite an easy trip. He sometimes takes children there or brings toys there and this type of thing, occasionally even bringing Mr. Bumbledrop.
And along the way, we will pick up some sort of recurring semi-regular characters. We'll meet Squish, the space boy, in his astronaut suit with his water pistol that gives him his name. Again, I think voiced by Patricia Somerset. And then there's King Dithers of Topsy Turvy Land, always in a dither and getting things wrong. I think that's Kenneth Connor doing the voice. But we also will meet Pongo the Pirate. And Flopsy the Ragdoll is a regular recurring character. I think treated very badly on Earth by Bossy Boots and finding some sort of happiness on Topsy Turvy Land.
Yes, Flopsy the Ragdoll is quite a major character in this, for sure.
And I've mentioned singing because the episodes often do feature songs performed by one of the puppet characters and the actress or actor doing the voice.
Yes, we have several of the characters singing at different times.
So it's production notes time, Brian, and it's quite interesting for this early show.
It is indeed. Torchy the Battery Boy was the second co-production between Gerry Anderson and Roberta Lee. This was sort of how Gerry Anderson got started in production, certainly in these puppet productions. Lee was the professional pseudonym of Rita Lewin. She lived 1926 to 2014 and did all sorts of things. She was a writer, composer, and producer, and continued working up right until her death in her 80s.
Actually, fascinating character with a remarkable history and output over the years, Brian.
Yeah, it wasn't that long that Roberta Lee and Gerry Anderson were working together, but Lee continued on to do lots of work on her own. So, you know, she started with The Adventures of Twizzle and Torchy the Battery Boy with Gerry Anderson, and then went on to do things like Sarah and Hoppity and Space Patrol in 1962. So she had some significant work there after that partnership ended as well.
And we were comparing notes. Her show Space Patrol still survives in the archive, but you were telling me, Brian, that Anderson and Lee's first show together, The Adventures of Twizzle, is it just one episode survives of that?
Yeah, only one episode survives of that, and that was also a show with 15-minute episodes, so you just have that one short episode, and that's all that's available in archive from that.
So probably this is, therefore, the first of Gerry Anderson's puppet shows that we can watch in its entirety. And it is fascinating because it's on these shows that Anderson starts to recruit the team of talented individuals who will go on to become such familiar names through the 60s on his shows. So, for instance, it's where Anderson first encountered the puppet sculptor and puppeteer Christine Glanville. It's where he first started working with Derek Medins. And it's where he first started doing music with Barry Gray.
That's right. So we had that team starting to come together already.
Absolutely. And of course, then it was called Anderson Provis Production, or AP Films. And of course, it's also where he had his secretary was a young woman called Sylvia Tam, who he would later go on to marry.
Yeah, and of course, Sylvia Anderson, as she would become, became a co-producer and would become very important in a lot of the Anderson shows, particularly throughout the 60s. And she would go on to become one of the first women to be successful as a television executive.
So really, this is the start of that remarkable period of 60s shows that we've talked about so many times.
Yeah, it really is where things get started with this. So The Adventures of Twizzle had been a success for ITC. So Roberta Lee and Gerry Anderson were given double the budget to do another puppet series.
And of course, something that his son Jamie Anderson has joked about over the years was how disappointed that Gerry Anderson was that he kept getting these puppet shows because he wanted to do live action, but they kept giving him expletive deleted puppet shows. But anyway, they were a success for him.
Yes, and he's talked about that on an interview as well. It was Roberta Lee who came to him with doing a puppet show, and he was, this was for Twizzle, he was disappointed at the time, but I believe she was the one coming with the money, so he had to go along with that and went with this idea that if he was going to do a puppet show, he was going to do the best puppet show he possibly could. And his dislike for puppets sort of drove him forward to make them work as well as they could. And that was quite successful. Roberta Lee, on the other hand, was very happy to be working with another puppet show and quite quickly wrote these 52 episodes and was aiming them as a target audience at her 8-year-old son. And I think that sort of makes sense that this is aimed at maybe 8 years old and even a little bit younger.
Yeah, certainly children under the age of 10, I think, isn't it? Or as you say, even younger, the preschoolers or starting at school kids.
Roberta Lee also composed the songs for Torchy the Battery Boy and hummed them to Barry Gray, who produced the music for this and was able to build something around those tunes that she had been humming.
And it's, you know, it's not the Barry Gray that we will come to know and love in the 60s. This is him, as you say, Brian, arranging and producing the music that's been given to him by Roberta Lee, doing these little hums and singing little bits to him, I guess, and he's going away and putting something down from that. Fascinating, though, you know, Roberta Lee, multi-talented.
Yeah, Barry Gray was working on this and he was arranging the instrumentals to go with things and what have you. But what you don't have is his voice as a composer. We get to hear that later in shows later in the 60s.
Meanwhile, they've got this little cottage industry, which I always love in production. You've got Christine Glanville is sculpting the puppet heads, but while she's doing that, her own father is in his workshop making the puppet bodies, and her mother, she's recruited everybody, her mother's sewing costumes. And this is, I guess, as far as I understand it, this is the first show where they tried to get the puppets' mouths to move in sync with the actor's dialogue. We perhaps talk next time about how successful or otherwise it was. But interestingly, Christine Glanville was experimenting with different materials for the puppet's mouth, something that would be able to be flexible and open and close rapidly. And strangely enough, she bought, of all things, initially a box of condoms because she thought the latex rubber might work for this. But they then found that the paint they were using on the puppets' faces wouldn't stick. And so in the end, they had to go with strips of chamois leather to actually make the puppet lips and get them to move. It's interesting, this little sort of industry that's sprung up making these puppets, Brian.
Yes, I think these ones were still fairly traditional marionettes. And what they were doing to try to get lip sync was to manually pull the mouth up and down with one of the puppet strings. And yeah, that's very difficult to do for something like this. So we know that they would move on to more sophisticated technology for that later. And that, of course, would be the solenoid, where you would have the audio of the dialogue being fed directly into the puppet, then an automatic little electronic device would open and close it. And that solenoid lip sync is usually what's called the beginning of Super Marionation, which would be a little bit later with Four Feather Falls, their next show.
Ah, fascinating details.
And we had Reg Hills and Derek Meddings creating sets and props for the puppets and rigging up fireworks to simulate the rocket ship engine. That was the first effect they did in their puppet shows, using these little firework sort of sparkler gadgets to give you like a rocket effect. This was before they were doing explosions.
And am I right in thinking, Brian, that when we watch the This Is Super Marionation, or filmed in Super Marionation rather, documentary, that it does feature Gerry Anderson talking about this and a few clips from Torchy of them trying to get the rocket to work?
Yes, in This Is Super Marionation, they did show some footage from Torchy the Battery Boy and talked about that as, you know, their progression in as they were moving towards bigger and better things.
Ah, right. Derek Meddings starting out.
Yes. And they would get into much more complicated effects by the time they were doing Supercar a couple of years later. The episodes were filmed in the ballroom of a disused mansion house called Islet Park on the banks of the River Thames.
Which sounds terribly grand, but apparently wasn't at all. Apparently it was very cramped, particularly in the ballroom. And because the sets were being made for the next day's shooting, you could often hear the noises coming through the building of the carpenters sawing away and so on. And also, because it was on the banks of the Thames, apparently it used to flood. And the house itself would stay dry, but all the grounds around it would be flooded. And there's even tales of Anderson's crew having to get in and out of the house in boats, in rowboats. And I've often wondered, since hearing this story, whether this would later influence that famous Thunderbirds episode where the house is cut off by water and the giant crocodiles are menacing them outside.
Oh, maybe so. Interesting point. The first 26 episodes were directed by Gerry Anderson himself, with Vivian Milroy taking over for series two when Anderson moved into what would be his typical role as producer. And to us looking at this now, the strings or wires that hold up these marionettes look quite visible. It was actually an advancement on the over the previous technology, and the wires were quite a bit thinner. And this is something that you always had at this time, was trying to go to thinner and less visible wires that would still be able to hold them up. And that was, at the time, what they were using was an improvement.
And television screens much smaller and much less quality then as well, Brian, I guess.
Yeah, that is a big part of it. You know, you look back at some of these things with modern televisions and it will look quite different, of course. The first series was broadcast on the ITV various regions, starting in ATV in the Midlands in 1959. It didn't actually broadcast in London until May 1960.
And of course, in that time, the independent ITV regions had much more sort of, I guess, control and say over what they broadcast and when and in what order. So the broadcast order varies from different parts of the country. I think on the DVD, they've tried to reproduce what they saw as the production order, which I think mostly they get right, although there's, you know, there is perhaps one or two episodes which may be slightly out of order because of certain props, I think. But anyway, it, you know, they did broadcast it in different orders in different regions. And of course, although it looks a little bit strange and early and crude to us now, it was astonishingly successful, this TV show. And again, you know, starting something that would become a thing for Gerry Anderson shows, the theme song became a sort of minor hit as well, Brian.
That seems so remarkable, looking back at what it was that would happen. Apparently, the Beatles actually performed the theme from Torchy the Battery Boy live at the Cavern Club, which seems utterly bizarre to me, but apparently that was something that happened.
A sentence that includes the Beatles, the Cavern Club, and Torchy the Battery Boy just doesn't seem likely, but apparently it did. And even if you've listened to the Let It Be recording sessions, the tapes that survive from 1969, Paul McCartney does a riff on the theme again during that recording session. Astonishing.
Yeah, all the way in 1969. I'll have to see if I can find that audio.
Fantastic. What a detail for us to find.
So we should talk about the availability.
We should. So in Region 2, I've been watching two box sets, one for each series. They are £8 and £10 each. The only extra is that there's a trailer on the first series box set, but there's no other extras. They're from Network DVD. Strangely, it doesn't feature some of those sort of bloopers that showed up on the Filmed in Super Mario Nation documentary, but then there can't be too many of those that survive anyway. But there you are. But still, it's all there, all the episodes, and it's relatively cheap here in Region 2. Across the pond, Brian?
Here in Region 1, there are DVD releases available. It's from a company called Wham! USA, and it might be a print-on-demand thing. I'm not sure, but they are available on Amazon. Series 1 sells for about $15 US and $16 Canadian. Series 2 sells for about $18 US and $19 Canadian. And those are quite stripped down. Again, you have, I think, an extra trailer, but that's about it. And you just have the episodes, but they're there and they're available.
Great stuff.
So next time, we will talk about some of the morality tales for children that are included in Torchy the Battery Boy.
And we'll talk about a few perhaps problematic elements seen with modern eyes, and also briefly mention spin-offs. It's a Gerry Anderson show. There were often spin-offs, and we'll talk about those next time as well. Plus, of course, we'll give our reviews and recommendations of this DVD.
Absolutely. Until then, you can find all of our episodes, including all of the Gerry Anderson ones, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in the conversations.
You can also find British Invaders as a proud member of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find at VogueNetwork.com. For other podcasts, gaming news, Twitch streaming, and so on, check out VogueNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also, signing off.